Today on New Horizons, Bob Olson, tour guide at Idaho's historic Old Penitentiary.
They thought it would be a daunting place that people, if they saw what it looked like, would try not to be housed there, to be sent there. A lot of the buildings in the early days were very, very unsanitary, and they were called sick buildings because the illnesses contracted inside of the old prison. There was no woman at any time executed at the old prison. There were 10 hangings over the 101 years, so that's not very many, I don't think.
I'm Bob Kustra, president of Boise State University. Welcome to New Horizons. Bob Olson is a tour guide at Idaho's Old Penitentiary, located off Warm Springs Avenue in southeast Boise. The Old Pen served as Idaho's prison for more than a century. It was built in 1870 when Idaho was still a territory, accepted its first prisoners in 1872, and closed its doors in 1973. During its long and colorful history, the prison housed thousands of convicted murderers, robbers, embezzlers, horse thieves, and other criminals. Among its most notorious inmates were Harry Orchard, convicted of the murder of former Idaho Governor Frank Stunenberg, and Lyda Southard, the so-called Lady Bluebeard, who is believed to have poisoned several husbands. In 1974, the old Idaho Penitentiary was listed on the National Register of Historic Places for its historical significance as a territorial prison. As a tour guide at the Old Pen, Bob has the opportunity to share some of the prison's fascinating history with visitors. He also has a personal connection. Bob's father was a guard at the Old Pen in the 1930s, and as a young child, Bob Olson lived in a home just behind the prison. Bob Olson, welcome to New Horizons.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's start with the Old Penitentiary closing down in 1973 after a century of use. Does it look any different today than it did 35 years ago?
Well, it does. It's dilapidated, fallen down. We try to maintain it to keep it in halfway decent shape so that the visitors will be safe in visiting to it. However, I'm sure just like everything else, over time will deteriorate.
Now, who has responsibility for the upkeep, the administration of the old penitentiary?
The Idaho State Historical Society administers this facility as well as the newly opened public archives and research library just down the road from it.
So in other words, if anybody has any concerns about how much is being spent to maintain the place, it's the Idaho State Historical Society they need to talk to.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, Idaho's Old Pen was one of just four territorial era prisons that are still standing. First of all, if I could display my ignorance here, is the Idaho territory of those days the same size as the state of Idaho is today, or did it take in more territory than what we call the state of Idaho today?
I think it actually was less. I think it started along around about where Lewiston is now to this date, and then comes down south toward our way.
And how many prisoners were housed in the old penitentiary?
Well, over the 101 years that it was in operation, it had 13,000 prisoners, 215 of which were women prisoners.
What was the peak number of prisoners housed there at any
one time?
At one time,
the most was 603, but it didn't last for too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Usually average around 250 to 300 prisoners.
How was the location of the prison chosen?
Well, it was chosen by the county commissioners at that time. They had decided that finally that the old pen would be located where it is on the present site, which at that time was about a mile away from downtown Boise, and they figured it was, you know, it was safe, no problems and whatever. Of course, since then, Boise has grown all out and all around it now, but at that time it was a mile away.
You know, that in itself is interesting because in the days we know of recent, you couldn't begin to build a prison near a populated area. They put them in the most remote corners of the state. And as a matter of fact, it's usually little towns whose economies are going all to pieces who put in for these prisons. Then I noticed that also in the history of the old pen, Warm Springs Avenue, the big, beautiful homes that we see, actually were built after the penitentiary was there.
Quite a few of them on that wonderful old street.
It's interesting that they would have thought they wanted to build so close to an old penitentiary. Was that an issue then?
I don't think it was.
They didn't even give it a second thought?
I don't think so, no. Warm Springs used to be a stagecoach route into Idaho City, so it was designed to be near that route, easy access to the prison at that time, and
boy,
still.
You can imagine the tensions that would be created today if someone suggested building a new prison right down the road from some of the nicest homes in any community. I don't care where you are, whether you're in Boise or whether you're someplace else. Now, the architecture of the prison is interesting. It's reminiscent of a castle built in grand style. Why was it?
And that design in that particular era was to design it as sort of like a castle. They thought it would be a daunting place that people, if they saw what it looked like, would try not to be housed there, to be sent there. So it was for that particular reason, basically. And also it was the architecture of that era.
Now, the dining hall and the cell house were both designed by inmates. And I think I saw in the materials that the inmates were later pardoned. Were they pardoned for the design, or were they pardoned for the normal course of good behavior?
I think partly on both.
Both?
The George Hamilton that designed the dining hall, I think he was in there for on a seven-year sentence for grand larceny, horse thief, and his sentence was about to be up anyway. But when he designed that, and he was kind of a, I wouldn't say, kind of, he was an amateur architect for sure, and kind of a visionary. And so I think by... His design, and it all worked out so well that they parted him early, partly for that reason.
And convict labor was used to construct several of the buildings. Was that common in those days?
It was very common to have inmate labor. Of course, they were sent to the prison mainly for hard labor, and that was part of the program.
Well, when did that practice stop?
Well, I can't tell you exactly the year it involved, but it was, I would say, after they started... In the 50s, when they started leaning toward more toward rehabilitation for inmates rather than hard labor.
Now, these facilities, having been constructed by inmates, the inmates obviously knew where all the tunnels were between the buildings. Were there actually tunnels used in the various escapes? And if so, was that related at all to the fact that the inmates designed the place?
I don't think it was related to the design. I think after the buildings were designed that and completed, and then later on, someone decided we needed to dig a tunnel or this or that. The only really tunnel that produced any great effect was early on in the first territorial prison building. They tunneled out of the building and out into the yard. But any other tunnels that were started, no inmates ever made it out.
And just for the record, apparently there were about 500 escape attempts. How many of those were successful?
Well, in the 101 years, yeah, well, 500 attempts or escapes. And on today's record, there's a list of 90 that are unaccounted for at this date. Of course, at that time, record systems were kind of ship-shoddy, so true number is probably not 90. But there were about 90 still listed on that.
Well, of those successful efforts... Let's hear more about how they succeeded. What did they do? They obviously didn't use the tunnels, because you say the tunnel wasn't a very successful approach. So how do you get out of a prison in the old days?
Well, most of the times you escape from the outside if you're working on an outside gang, either up at the quarry or out into the orchards or the other fields or road worker stuff. But some did escape from the inside. Only about 50 out of all that really escaped from the inside of the walls. The very first two, in 1872, when they brought the first 11 inmates over, they were brought from the prison area in Idaho City. And they escaped 1 month after the prison had opened and after they had been sentenced out there.
This prison in 1973 closed. Now, I remember touring it in 2003, and it certainly didn't look like the modern prisons that I've had an opportunity to visit. In recent years, it was a product of its age. So I guess the question is that it? It closed in 73 because it was simply too dilapidated, or was there more to it than that?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with overcrowding and also with it being really becoming very unsanitary. A lot of the buildings in the early days were very, very unsanitary, And they were called sick buildings because usually lots of prisoners that were brought in, if they weren't ill by the time they got there, they certainly were ill by the time they left, and some even died because of illnesses contracted inside the old prison.
There were some riots in the 1970s. What were those all about?
Well, the major riot in 1973, which was the last riot that occurred before it had closed, it occurred, I think, in March of 73, took place after an inmate had already been sent out to the now-current prison out behind Gallon Field. And he showed up one morning all beat up and bloodied and claimed that a guard had beat him up during the night, which turned out to be not true. However, they sent him back out here because the hospital area was still out here, and he figured he could escape from this old prison a whole lot easier than he could from the new one. When they got them all patched up to send him back, he didn't want to go back. Got a bunch of fellow inmates together and got access to mattresses and tables and chairs and desks and stuff, and set those on fire, tossed them into the dining hall, and then also into, at that time, their first territorial prison building became a chapel, and then tossed it into the chapel, set those two buildings on fire, which destroyed them completely.
You're listening to Bob Olson. He is a tour guide at Idaho's historic Old Penitentiary, and we're learning a little bit about the history of that place. If you have not had a chance to visit it, I might remind you that it's open every day from noon to 5 p.m., last admission at 4:30. Get out there and see it. It's really fascinating.
It's history. It's Idaho history, and I think it behooves us to get in there and learn some of this stuff or refresh your memory.
Exactly. Solitary confinement at the prison was known as Siberia. Can I assume that's because it was so doggone cold there?
It was. It was. When they designed it, in the summertime, the walls would be so hot that they would get slimy. In the wintertime, so very, very cold, that frost would form on the walls, and you could scrape your fingers on it and scrape the frost off. It was named Siberia basically because of that, and named after that area in Russia that's basically ice and snow year-round or thereabouts. Solitary confinement means single-man cells.
How long were prisoners often held there?
Well, usually they were in there anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. However, there was one inmate that was in there for 7 months. When they were fed, they were given a spoon and a tray and a cup, and they had to give them all back at the end of the meal. He kept his spoon and wanted to flatten it to make it a weapon, which he did. He wound up 7 months without being able to change clothes, without a shower, through hot summertime, so you can imagine what he smelled like. However, there were also inmates that were in there for a year, year and a half. A couple of those had come out, had lost their mind. They wound up at Blackfoot. However, about a month ago, I met an ex-inmate that came out, and he was hoping to become a tour guide for us, and he was also an inmate that served four years of a five-year sentence. And he told me he had an older brother that was in there, and he had served 20 years in the Idaho prison, and his brother was a bad enough dude that he spent 3 consecutive years in solitary. However, he did not lose his mind.
3 years in solitary. So that must be the record right there.
That's got to be the record. I haven't heard of anything other than that. In fact, I was not even aware of that until he personally had told me that had occurred.
Mm-hmm. He must have headed right over to the Blackfoot Mental Hospital after that.
Well, I don't know. Another inmate had taken a coat button with him. He knew that about these other two that had been there for a year, year and a half. And to keep his mind fresh, he played with the button, made up games, talked to it, just to keep his mind sharp, just in case. Because you never knew how long you were going to be in there, because it was at the discretion of the warden.
What's the record for the youngest prisoner ever to stay at the old penitentiary?
10 years old.
10 years old?
10 years old in 1895. The young inmate had committed murder, had killed a man who had a fight with his dad the night before. They had sentenced him for 10 to life. They didn't want to house him with a major prisoner, so he stayed with the warden and the warden's wife, and she looked after him and taught him his reading, his writing, and his arithmetic. And a few months later, a couple came along and adopted him, and he became a model citizen. James Oscar Baker, inmate number 88. Second youngest, 11 years old. And his name was James Whitaker, inmate number 1949. He, too, had committed murder, although he had killed his mother. She wanted him to help with the laundry, and he wanted to go out and work in the fields. I guess his mother had been kind of mean with him over the years anyway, beaten from time to time. But after this occurrence, he got a hold of a shotgun and shot her. He too sentenced for 10 to life. However, in the nighttime, he did sleep in an indoor dormitory. In the daytime, like the other young lad, they worked on the outside as runners or worked in the fields or on roads or whatever. This man served 9 years of his 10-year sentence. And I guess he just recently died in 1969 in Idaho Falls.
Now, probably the most famous prisoner in the old Idaho penitentiary is Harry Orchard. And for our listeners who may not remember that name, Governor Frank Stunenberg left office and was going to his mailbox in Caldwell one day, as I remember the story. And the mailbox exploded and killed him. And Harry Orchard is fingered as the guy who probably did it because he was organizing all those labor riots up north in the mines. Or organizing labor. I'll leave it to somebody else to decide whether they were riots or not. Anyway, he's convicted in 1905 and comes to the old Idaho penitentiary. First of all, it's my recollection that he never owned up to that. I don't know whether you know that or not. And I wonder, what do the rest of the inmates think about having this guy who was on the front page of every newspaper in Idaho being one of their own?
In my research that I have found, and I don't mean to be critical, whatever, but he did own up to it very, very early
on.
Okay. He did own up to it. Uh-huh. And I don't know what their mindset was out there. When I knew Harry, I was about 8 or 9 years old, and at this time he was in charge of the turkeys and the chicken farms. And twice a day, summer times, I could go with him to gather eggs to one of the hen houses. He'd meet me at the gate and hand me a bucket, and away we would go. It would take us a couple of hours to gather eggs. And so he was okay at that time. There was no problem. Nobody had any fears with him. I certainly never had. I knew my dad had told me why he was in there. However, he said didn't think there would be any problems, and there never was. Never was with me.
So your dad did explain. You knew that this was the guy who perhaps was the most infamous character in Idaho.
I did know.
And that in no way affected your relationship with him. What kind of a guy was he? He's a nice guy?
Well, he was a nice, quiet guy. Yeah, he was a nice guy to me. He didn't talk very much, and I certainly wish that I could remember what we did talk about over the years. Of course, I did not. Mm-hmm. He also had another inmate that was in there, a lifer, had committed murder. His name was Guy Gould, and he helped him with the chickens and the turkeys. And occasionally I would meet Guy instead of Harry, and Guy would take me down through the... And he talked an awful lot. He told a lot of jokes and stories, and there again, I can't recall those, and I certainly wish I could. But there certainly was no problems with either one of those guys. Harry had a shack on the outside of the walls most of the time, depending on who the warden was. Some wardens said, you're an inmate, at nighttime you will sleep in your cell. However, most of them let him stay in his shack on the outside of the wall, different areas at different times, just depending on the warden.
Well, now, I assume that was a special privilege that not every inmate was given.
Absolutely. I think by that time he'd been there probably a good many years. I'm talking now 1939, 8 or 9 in there. So you see, he's been there quite a while.
Why do you think a guy who blows up a governor gets a special privilege like that? That's a pretty good deal. Maybe the wardens didn't particularly care much for the political process or what?
Well, I think personally is the fact that he admitted right off the top, and he shortly after was sentenced there, became very, very religious, and so he never caused them a day's problem in any way, shape, or form. If they would ask him to do some menial thing, he did it without any problems, and so I think they just kind of felt, well, you know, he's serving his time, and he's minding his own business, and he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. So I think that had an awful lot to do with it.
You're listening to Bob Olson. He's a tour guide at the old penitentiary. He actually lived out there as a kid, and needless to say, you're hearing the stories of this infamous place. Let's talk about the women's ward. How many women served time there, and what were their crimes? Were their crimes any different from the crimes the men committed?
Well, yes, they were. In some cases, most of the time, like it was a larceny, grand larceny. Oh, different. Certainly they did have a committed murder. There was some white slavery, manslaughter, forgery, adultery, this kind of stuff.
The first female inmate was a Native American woman convicted of manslaughter. What do we know about her and her crime?
We don't know too much about it other than that she had killed some white man. Her name was Hennaby. She was housed in one of the cells inside the walls at that time in the First Territorial Prison building on the upper level on the third tier. She did escape at one time and was captured and returned.
Were women always segregated in their own buildings, or was there a time when they were inside the main prison walls?
In the very beginning, there were first two of them were inside the main walls, Margaret Harder being the second one. She was 50 years old at the time that she was sentenced. She was housed in another cell part of it. But then they decided if they were going to get women that they better have a separate facility. And so then they moved the facility for women into the old warden's home after they built him a new home. And eventually build a wall around it and made it a different segregated cell block of its own.
Were there women serving in the penitentiary at the time it was closed in 1973?
No, they were gone. I think they had taken them out of there, I think, in 1968. I'm not sure of that date, but they were all sent out of the area.
Well, let's talk about Lady Bluebeard, the serial killer who did in several husbands. Was she the ward's most infamous resident?
I would say so. She served the longest time, 20 years, although some of these other women were sentenced for life for this and that. Most of them got out early after a few months or a few years. There wasn't much to keep them busy, and so they were didn't cause any problems whatsoever, and so they were basically released early. She, however, had served after 10 years, had escaped with help from another male inmate, and was gone, I think, 15 months or so, and then recaptured and brought back, served another 10 years, so she served a full 20 years of her life sentence, was paroled, and then eventually pardoned.
You know, in two or three cases here, you've mentioned people who did some fairly serious things, and they don't seem to serve as long as we hear people serving today. They're pardoned, they get out. Is that a just fact of life back in those days?
I would think so. But this surprised me quite a bit in that their sentences were pretty well commuted on a lot of very bad things that they have done, and I thought probably should be a little bit longer. I might also mention that there was no woman at any time executed at the old prison. There were 10 hangings over the 101 years, so that's not very many, I don't think, but no women ever executed there.
When was the last hanging?
1957. An inmate named Ray Snowden had killed a lady in Garden City and, of course, was sentenced to hang. Idaho never did have a hangman or an executioner, so when it come time to hang him, they borrowed one from a state penitentiary in Walla Walla, Washington. As it turned out, there was no problems in that way.
Is it pretty much the way we remember it from watching movies where all of a sudden the floor drops away and...
Yes, the indoors gallows does have a metal doorway that it drops over, drops down, and they drop down into what we call a drop room. And down in that drop room, they had a gurney and a couple of prison officials, the undertaker, two doctors. Then when he was dropped through, he was lowered onto the gurney, taken to Boise, prepared, brought back out, and is now buried in the old Idaho Penitentiary Cemetery in an unmarked grave.
I was going to ask about that because I assume some of these characters are not the kind that family would find and give a decent burial. So where on the grounds is the cemetery? Is that part of the tour?
Well, we hope to make it part of the tour at one time. At any time when I am out there as a tour guide and anybody wishes to see the cemetery, I will take them up to it. It's located just a short distance on the backside of the botanical gardens.
How many graves?
64 graves, all filled. Earliest one, I think, they think was around 1880, but they're not sure.
And those would be people, some of whom probably died of natural causes.
Some of them,
yeah. And then some, of course, who were hanged.
Right. If a family wanted the body, they would have to buy it or pay for the funeral. And if they didn't want to have anything to do with it, then the state buried them in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting stories about those that we do know about up in there. And, of course, we will relate those to you, naturally, if we give you the tour.
Mm-hmm. Prisoners enjoyed a prison band. They had a prison baseball team that actually played other community teams outside the prison. How did that work?
Well, early on, they got a chance to go out around the area and play ball against city teams, college teams, just groups of people. They got one particular game that we were playing over in Caldwell, and running back the backside of center field was the railroad tracks. And, of course, you know what happened. He hopped a freight. Well, they caught him before he got to Boise, but that ended all of the away games. From then on, all games were home games played inside the walls. And as they built buildings and they ran out of room for the ball diamond, they built a new ball diamond for him, which was to the left and inside of the old botanical gardens now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gives new meaning to the home run, as they say. That's the guy's inventive anyway.
Absolutely.
I thought you were going to say we never saw him again, and he didn't even make it to Boise.
No, he didn't make it to Boise, but they nailed him before then. Incidentally, some of those scores in those ball games when they played inside the walls were very, very high-scoring games for the Pens, for the Cons. They were called the Outlaws, naturally. And the visitors would, well, score something like 20-1 or 22-1 or whatever. Reason being that the Cons knew which way basically a ball was going to bounce when it hit off the wall, which direction it was going to careen, so they could retrieve it. Your visitors didn't have any idea and would spend time running around trying to catch up with the ball. So consequently, they had a lot of high-scoring games in that respect.
You mentioned earlier some of the off-site prison industries like the quarry, the dairy, and the farm, and that prisoners would spend considerable time outside the walls. I assume that may be one of the reasons there were around 500 escape attempts.
Yes, that's true. Early on, they had the quarry out behind Table Rock, and the early ones were housed up there in tents. They wore ball and chains and leg irons, and most of them that had escaped were 13 from that area. But also they had the prison farm, where now Warm Springs Golf Course sits. It was all prison row crops. The dairy farm was on Eagle Island, where they had their own dairy farm and hog farm out there. They had a small dairy barn and a few cows on the backside of the prison area, but most of it was there at Eagle Island. So they had, and then they had their own orchards early on, and so they had a lot of outside areas where they could work. Of course, the prison was self-supporting at that time, too, so it didn't have to buy any of that kind of stuff. Raised, grew all of its own stuff.
Now, one of the things I remember when I toured the prison is just how dark and dingy, cold, poor ventilation. You just really didn't feel like you wanted to be part of that place. And I would have to believe that that promoted illness. Was there considerable disease generated from that prison?
Yes, there was early on. Early on, I think until about around 1910s or a little after 1900 or thereabouts, when they got indoor plumbing. But prior to that, they used what they call a honey bucket. You know what that was.
Oh, and, yes.
And, of course, very poor ventilation, which attributed to a lot of the illnesses and stuff. And so it was very easy to, like, say, get sick or whatever from just being around that environment. It was not a very pleasant environment at all.
Well, Bob, I have some more questions, and I bet our listeners have some more questions, but I've run out of time. The good news for our listeners is that the old penitentiary is just down the street. And for those living in Boise anyway, it's awfully easy to get over there. And let's give them the tour hours again. That's noon to 5 p.m. every day, with the last admission being at 4:30. Is that correct?
That's correct. Just before we leave, can I give a shout out to my compadres out at the old penitentiary, our other volunteer tour guides and the staff, as well as the staff and the volunteers down at the Public Archives and Research Library. I invite you all to come out and participate. Take advantage of this wonderful Idaho resource available at our fingertips.
Well put. Bob Olson, tour guide for the Old Penitentiary, thank you for joining us today on New Horizons.
You're very welcome.
Next week, Mary O'Malley, managing editor of the Owyhee Outpost, a journal of the history of Owyhee County, Idaho. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. Research provided by Kathleen Craven. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Custra. Please join me next week as we talk to the people who help shape our world in both the Treasure Valley and beyond on New Horizons.